You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 8th of February 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're asking, who's afraid of deflation? It looks set to remain an issue at the front and centre of global economics in 2015. Our experts and guests will put current deflationary pressures in a historical context and analyse the occasionally blurry area between good and bad deflation. We start with Kiran Ganesh, cross-asset strategist at UBS Wealth Management.
Over the past few years, we've had obviously a huge amount of money printing by various central banks around the world, and it's been puzzling why it hasn't really contributed to much inflation over the course of the past few years. We've had an environment of very low inflation around the world for a number of years now. And the reason that deflation is now becoming such a big topic is that on top of that low inflation environment, and we've now had a very sharp decline in the oil price, which is meaning that headline rates of inflation, so the average price that people are paying for goods that they usually buy, is now falling on a year-over-year basis in places like the Eurozone and is very low in places like the UK and the US.
Andreas Herfert is the chief economist for UBS Wealth Management.
The deflation issue is probably one of the least understood issue. And it's usually put in the sort of narrative going back to the Great Depression or to what has happened in Japan over the last 25 years. And those two events were basically bad deflation type of evolutions. Now, if we look back in history, however, if we go back to the 19th century, for example, what we can see is that half of the years of the 19th century, countries like the UK or the US were in deflation, and half of the time they were in inflation, and they weren't half of the time in depression or in stagnation. So basically, you had some periods where you were seeing both deflation and at the same time you were seeing growth. The deflation which was generated back then was due to phenomena like we have today, globalization, technical progress, those sort of things. And this is, in my view, the good deflation. Now, the problem is deflation can also be bad, and this is what is happening, for example, currently, or what might happen currently to Europe, when you look at the expectation of inflation, which are declining more and more. And if we go into this sort of deflation period, it will have impact on growth, which will be negative, actually.
Bob Swarup is a financial commentator and investor and author of Money Mania. He explains why deflation is the word on everyone's lips.
I think the problem is that it never really went away. It started back in 2007. And, you know, all that really happened was we lost sight of it for a little while. And now it's resurfaced again. I mean, the real fundamental problem is that if you look at what caused the last crisis, it was the most enormous amount of leveraging up of the financial system. Now, what's happened since then is that we haven't actually deleveraged at all. And so, you know, that overhang of bad debt, that overhang of, you know, stuff that needs to be unwound is still out there. And that's really dragging economies down, is dragging banks down. And so in this kind of world where people are more and more worried about safety more than anything else, I think the problem is that simply sucks growth out of the system and forces people to hoard.
A lot of column inches and analysis are given over to the idea of deflation as a negative force. But can it have a positive impact? Can there be such a thing as good deflation? Kiran Ganesh again.
I think if you tell the average consumer that the price of things that they're buying is falling, they would be quite delighted about that. And, you know, we think that the fall in gasoline prices is leading to an increase in consumer spending in lots of different countries, whether you look to Germany, Spain, or the US as examples. Recently, we've had very strong consumer data. The reason that economists tend to get more concerned about deflation is that if you see prices of many goods declining all at once, then they grow concerned that consumers might start to think, should I buy that good today or should I buy it next month or next year when it may be cheaper? So that would obviously be a very bad thing for the economy if people stop spending because they think that prices are going to get lower in general.
We asked Bob Swarup whether he felt there could be good deflation in the current climate.
I think there is good deflation. I mean, for example, if I look at what's happening with oil, that is most certainly good deflation. If I look at this whole phenomenon, as I would call it, collaborative consumption, that is good deflation. I think the problem is that politicians and policymakers in general often don't think about the long-term view on how to handle this. If you go back to the 1880s, the 1870, there was a recession, a depression rather, in America that used to be called the Great Depression, that got superseded. It was for 23 years almost. And the reason was actually over that period, GDP went up in real terms. But because you had all this mechanization and factories and stuff like that coming in, people's wages and prices fell. I mean, it got to the point where, for example, farmers in Kansas were burning their corn because it was cheaper to burn it for fuel than to sell it. But it was actually a huge time of growth for the American economy. The problem was it also created all sorts of resentment. I mean, a lot of racial tensions came around that town. Chinatown in America was born then because of segregation laws and things like that. So politicians be very careful because there's always that tension between deflation and, you know, good or bad. It just depends on how it works with the system. The problem you have is there's so much bad debt that if they don't restructure it, all deflation becomes bad in some form. The problem also is if they don't handle the inevitable social tensions that deflation, good or bad, creates, they will be unable to solve the wage conundrum, and they'll be unable to solve the rise of the anti-austerity parties, or for that matter, the more populist parties.
Ricardo Garcia, head of European economics at the UBS Chief Investment Office, expects months of negative inflation prints, but believes this can be positive.
We will have quite a number of months with negative inflation prints, in particular in the Eurozone, and so this will remain in headlines going forward. But as I said before, we believe that this is good deflation. Obviously, we'll have to keep track of any risks, like, for instance, developments in wage negotiations, tariff negotiations, to see whether this has an impact. But this is exactly the reason why the ECB has decided to do quantitative easing, not to mitigate those risks.
Chris Farrell is senior economics contributor at Marketplace and author of the book Deflation: What Happens When Prices Fall. He gives us a historical backdrop for the current landscape.
Well, right now, we're in an era of bad deflation. And I think this is a very critical distinction: bad deflation, good deflation. So what is bad deflation? You know, bad deflation is when you have demand is falling, you have the economy is weak, and it just becomes increasingly expensive to pay your debts, to pay your workers. So bad deflation, probably the worst case we have in our mind, is the Great Depression. And when you say deflation, most people think about the Great Depression, right? So if you look at Europe right now, what's happening in the continent, I mean, that's having a bad deflation. What is good deflation? Good deflation is more of a supply side driven decline in prices. So the classic example is the era from after the U.S. Civil War to about 1900. And prices fell during that period of time by slightly less than 2% on an average annual rate, but the economy grew by 4%. So a supply-side driven deflation is because you had these technological innovations like mass production and railroads. You know, the price of transport really came down. And you had incredible immigration, you know, people coming to the United States, going to Australia, going to New Zealand. So you had massive flows of people. And so a supply-side driven deflation, you have high productivity, you have rapid economic growth, but all this activity drives down the level of prices. And that is a good deflation. And we have elements of it in our economy right now, if you think about technology and the growing role that technology has. But in Europe, it's really being driven by a fall in demand and all the concerns that you have about a weak economy with falling prices.
And here's Mike Ryan, UBS Chief Investment Strategist for Wealth Management Americas and Regional CIO for the U.S.
When you're talking about just deflation, when you're talking about the general level of prices, all prices falling, I would argue that that's never, at least in historical experience, never been a good thing. Now, it doesn't mean that having pockets of deflation in certain areas of the economy, for example, if we're seeing certain types of commodity prices fall, that's deflation within the energy sector. It doesn't mean we're having broad deflation across the entire economy. So if we're having deflation in energy prices, that's not such a bad thing because it provides additional support to the consumer, it lowers the input costs for companies. So that declining price in certain commodities or in certain parts of the economy can actually be a good thing. But an overall decline in price level, especially when you have a high level of indebtedness, is typically not a good thing.
You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Now, consumption in some affected markets appears to be holding up well. What does the latest data from the Eurozone tell us about how the region is managing? Ricardo Garcia.
When we look at the actual data, we get very comforting signs. Retail sales is holding up very well. In the fourth quarter, we already had a good starting base. In the third quarter, consumer confidence is at very high levels. Now you could say that there might be a lagged effect from energy price developments and inflation developments on consumption. But here again, we also get some data supporting our case. The European Commission is compiling surveys to consumers about their intentions for major purchases. And the latest data as of January shows that the intentions to purchase major items is at the highest level since the last decade. Now, so this is giving us comfort that consumers are actually more prone to spend this extra money that they have rather than saving it.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at how central banks have measured up under deflationary pressure, and we'll look at a case study of bad deflation, Japan. Kiran Ganesh takes up the story of how central banks are faring in this challenging climate. One of the key risks he identifies is that of overreaction.
I think that the risk that central banks run is that they overreact to the very low levels of inflation we have at the moment. Of course, if we look through to next year, even assuming the price of oil remains stable, then the rate of inflation will increase because the level of oil that you're comparing with in the previous year is obviously lower. So the risk that central banks run is that they overreact today, they keep interest rates low, and then when we go into next year, you have an environment where oil prices are perhaps higher than they were this year, and maybe even wages are starting to grow up for normal people, and then you start to see higher rates of inflation. So I think that's the major risk that central banks run.
It's not just about central banks' activity, says Bob Swarup. As he explains, the issue runs much deeper.
So central banks, I think, have done about as much as they really could have when it came to monetary policy. The problem with restructuring is that's actually more of a political issue, where you have to sit there and negotiate. You also have additional things like regulation and tax, which are going to cause problems. So let's take an example as to why bond yields are going downwards, ever downwards in Europe. You have a simple problem that at this point in time, everyone assumes that the real marker of quality now is just real yields. You no longer care about the nominal yield, you just want to preserve as much capital as you can. That's one problem. And what was interesting was recently Nestle issued corporate bonds for the first time ever at a negative interest rate, which has never been heard of. You now have a whole number of sovereigns where certainly at the short end, they all have negative interest rates. That is the most amazing example of a voluntary destruction of capital in some form. But the other reason why it's being driven, and this is the unintended consequences of regulation and the reaction we had the last few years, is that QE has sucked a lot of collateral out of the system. At the same time, regulation has demanded that whether it's banks or financial institutions or investors for that matter, if they're sitting there doing any form of derivatives, any form of hedging, which by the way is pervasive across the financial community now and the investment community, they have to hold collateral and that to high quality collateral. Now, if you have a problem where one person is sucking it out of the system as fast as they can and they're now ramping it up, you're going to try and get as much as you can as well. And you don't care what price you get it at because the price that you're paying is irrelevant. What matters more is being able to function and run your book. So you see, those kind of pressures actually exacerbate the deflation.
Time to look to a case study of so-called bad deflation now. And there's no better or worse example to consider than Japan. Alicia Ogawa is Senior Advisor at the Center on Japanese Economy and Business at Columbia Business School. We asked her, what's the background to Japan as the classic case study in bad deflation?
It's not just the last couple of years. We talk about the lost two decades. You know, I teach at university. There are Japanese students that I run into who have, at the university level, who have never, ever seen interest rates go up, who until very recently had never seen stock prices go up. I mean, they've lived their whole lives, you know, in this environment.
What does she make of the record and policies of the Bank of Japan in handling this challenge?
Well, again, I think since it's such an unusual case and since Japan seems to be the leader in this experiment, there's been an evolution in thinking on this. I mean, it is quite true that when the Japanese economic asset bubble exploded in the late 80s, early 90s, that the Bank of Japan was very slow to react. And if we look at the reaction of the U.S. Fed to the financial crisis, you know, it was much, much, much faster and much bigger. But even there, you know, in the United States, we have critics saying it should have been bigger. It should have been faster. So at first, I think the tendency was to blame the central bank, the Bank of Japan. But as the central bank has now become the most aggressive printer of money, exerciser of QE, with very little result, I think there is now focus on what about fiscal policy? What about deregulation? What role does that play? What role does demographics play? And I think now we begin to understand that there are several factors at work here which are very complicated. And in Japan's case, since it's gone for so long, I think it's an especial challenge to try to rewind the clock.
Alicia Ogawa there with the view from Japan. Time for a closing thought from Zurich now. Here's Kiran Ganesh with the client view. According to Kiran, there are two key words, gold and uncertainty.
I think the greater level of uncertainty we have over the inflation outlook as we go into next year, whether it's continued deflation or even higher rates of inflation, is making it a less certain investment outlook. We're, you know, continuing to encourage our clients to, you know, be well diversified in the face of that. I think the second area where client interest probably is picking up is on gold, because when you have an environment of uncertainty about inflation, it both makes it relatively cheap to buy gold compared to other assets like government bonds, but also many clients see gold as a potential inflation hedge. So there's certainly an increase in the amount of interest in assets like gold.
And that brings us to the end of this 18th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance, every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com, or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.